College conferences around the country have put out their schedules for football this season, but does that mean there will actually be a season?
When you have no centralized leadership, when you have such big roster sizes, when you don't have as much money to test, the people who run college football are trying to thread a needle right now.
That is Bruce Feldman. He covers college football for The Athletic, and he's our guest on today's show. I'm Seth Davis from The Athletic, and this is The Comeback, COVID-19, and the Return of Sports. We'll get to Bruce Feldman in a moment, but first let's update you on what's happening around the world of sports. After a 20-week layoff, both the NHL and NBA returned to action this past weekend. The NHL launched into a 24-team playoff format with games being held in two bubble cities in Canada. The NBA has set up a bubble in Orlando, and it began playing the league's final 8 regular season games. When those are done, the league will hold its normal 16-team playoffs. So far, so good. Both leagues have been able to maintain their bubbles with 0 positive tests. It's a completely different story in Major League Baseball, which is not playing its games in a bubble. Already, the league has seen 2 outbreaks, one on the Miami Marlins and the other on the St. Louis Cardinals. The Marlins were forced to pause for more than a week and are finally set to get back on the field on Tuesday. The Cardinals situation is still in limbo. To deal with the suspension of games and condensed schedules, teams will play shortened 7-inning doubleheaders. In football, the NFL and its Players Association are in the final stages, we hope, of their negotiations on how the league is going to manage the pandemic. One major sticking point is the deadline for players to opt out of the season. The NFL reportedly wants players to decide soon whether they will play this year. That has received some pushback from players who feel the league might be rushing those decisions. Live practices are scheduled to begin in 2 weeks. Now to college football, where games are supposed to begin in a month. Each conference has a different plan on how to go about conducting a season, and there are reports that the NCAA may cancel fall championships altogether. I broke all of it down with Bruce Feldman, who covers college football for The Athletic. Bruce, welcome to the show. Let's get right to it. NCAA Board of Governors is going to meet on Tuesday. That's the next big benchmark in this process of whether or not we're going to have football. What expect to come out of that?
I'd be surprised if the NCAA decides to pull the plug on fall championships. And obviously the ramifications beyond just that. And keep in mind, the NCAA doesn't oversee college football. So it's not like it's college hoops or one of the other sports where they're involved with the championships. But the thinking would be, if the presidents determine that, would, and keep in mind, though, a lot of people who are on the Board of Governors aren't really Power Five related people. But if they made that determination, how would the rest of college sports and the presidents who are involved in college football, what would they say? Would they go, okay, well, they're determining it's not safe. How can we justify saying it's safe for the rest of us to keep playing and play college football, which is obviously less of a social distancing sport than probably anything, and with bigger rosters and just a lot more challenges that go into it. So our friends over at SI.com a few days ago over the weekend had reported that the potential of, hey, if they go in that direction, would there be some kind of breakaway from the Power Five? My hunch on that is that might be some folks floating that to go, hey, NCAA, don't back us into a corner by this. You won't like the response. But I don't know. I just don't see the NCAA taking a big, strong stance on this at this point. I could be wrong, but they had that opportunity like about 10 days ago and they didn't do anything. I'm not sure if anything will change much for them when they get together on Tuesday.
Well, just to get into the weeds a little bit on this, because I think people get confused, the NCAA doesn't necessarily run sports at all, right? We're talking about whether or not they're going to hold championships in each of these sports. So does it eventually come down to each individual conference deciding if it's going to have a season? Like, for example, if the NCAA says we're not going to have a NCAA soccer championship in the calendar year 2020. Particular leagues could still have a soccer season if they wanted, right? So why would the Board of Governors want to have to make these final decisions as opposed to leaving the conferences to make the important decisions?
Well, I think one thing that I've heard from a lot from ADs around the country and mostly from the Power Five people I've talked to is, yeah, we've talked a lot about how we're trying to be on the same page. And one thing we've realized is we're more divided than we've ever been. And they've kind of realized that if they didn't believe it before, if let's say the Big Ten decided, you know what, we don't think it's appropriate for us to try to play college football. I would not be surprised immediately if the Pac-12 said, we're not playing either. I don't think the Pac-12 wants to be the first Power Five school to go, we got to shut it down. I could see if the Big Ten did it, it would not surprise me at all if the Pac-12 were to follow suit immediately. As far as the rest, especially the SEC, I don't know if they would make that decision. I could see them saying, hey, we feel confident in our procedures, in our protocols, and the advice we're getting from the medical experts, we're going to try to play. And if it was just the SEC and perhaps the Big 12 or maybe the ACC, I think they would still try to do it. I don't think because one part of college football and major college football at that decided to do something, I'm not sure it would have a complete, I won't say knee jerk, but I don't think it would be a slam dunk for them to go, yeah, we're following suit. I could see the Pac-12 following suit, but I'm not sure. I'm not as confident that the rest of power brokers in college sports would follow suit.
But the point is, though, the NCAA, quote, the NCAA, the Board of Governors, they don't have the authority to shut down college sports, right? They're just talking about championships, right?
Right. And that's right. And they don't have any say-so over college football. And remember, some of the Board of Governors, most of the Board of Governors, it's not like you're talking about people who are, you know, having, you know, on the phone with Greg Sankey all the time. Some of these are from much smaller levels of college athletics. So when you've seen, you know, we did a story on The Athletic a couple of weeks ago about what would happen when the Ivy Leagues were about to shut down in football, and that subsequently happened. There were some dominoes that went to that. The CAA conference, which is really good in FCS football, then it shut down. And we've seen other aspects of college football shut down at different levels. But it's a different animal when you get into the biggest revenue side of it. And they have a level of autonomy, as said in the Autonomy Five, basically, and how they like to think of themselves.
And that's why, not to get on my own personal soapbox, but when people say, well, you know, we need a commissioner for college football, I mean, not every conference is alike. They have different missions. They have different resources. They have different competitive models, financial models. I'm not sure I want one person making a national policy or decision for all these leagues. So
right, and Seth, you're talking about it as somebody who's objective, not like has money on the table necessarily per conference. Like our friend Tim Brando has been arguing for a conference, you know, for a czar of college football for years ad nauseum. If you know Tim, it's always ad nauseum, right? He's just harping and harping. And I think there's some validity to it. But the reality, I think, is Greg Sankey and his constituents going to want to do that? They didn't want to play the same number of games as everybody else. Why would they want somebody else to come in and tell them what they need to do when they like the situation the way they've structured it and the situation they have? They don't want somebody to kind of to split up the pie. I'm not sure the Big Ten wants it either, because they're making a lot more money this way. So I think that's the part where these people clearly do not want to be told what to do, because you're seeing evidence of it as we've gone further into the COVID pandemic.
Yes, and always appreciate a good Tim Brando reference as well. So anyway, in terms of how they're actually operating right now, we did have this slew of leagues actually announcing their schedules. It's kind of an amalgam, you know, no non-conference games, later starts, you build in empty weeks, bye weeks to allow for inevitable postponements and flexibility. The optimist in me, Bruce, would like to see this as a good sign that these games might actually happen. Am I being too Pollyannish?
You know, I'm with you on that, because I felt like, all right, this is quote unquote, we haven't seen much of a plan. This at least feels like a plan. And so you had back-to-back days with the ACC and with certainly the SEC. And it's like, okay, these are encouraging signs. Something's, you know, kind of put out there, right? And, you know, there's the Notre Dame component of it, which was significant for the ACC. But then all of a sudden it's like, you know, a day later you get bad news out of MLB. And it's like, you know, it feels like a lot of two steps forward, one step back with this. And so I think it's okay to have guarded optimism with this. I mean, we got our fingers crossed that it can work. I mean, I think from talking to a lot of trainers in college football, they feel like they have a better handle on how to deal with COVID, and their players are taking it more seriously now. And so they think that bodes well. What concerns them the most is two things. One, what happens when the regular students come back to campus? they expect there'll probably be a surge, and how will that impact their teams? And also, you know, 18 to 22 year olds is one thing. A lot of their staff are not 18 to 22. They're much older. Some are over 60. Some have underlying conditions. Some are not in the greatest of shape. That's a real concern for them too. So I think this is complicated. It's such a, you know, the term, it's a fluid situation. This is a really fluid situation. It's a virus, and there's not just the virus, but it's also like how other people are dealing with it, how it's affecting MLB. If MLB had to shut down, I don't know how college football, where it's a sport, as one coach pointed out to me, it's a sport where way less social distancing, way bigger rosters, and these guys aren't professionals. I don't know how a conference commissioner were able to go, yeah, baseball couldn't play, but we're going to try.
Totally agree with you on that. So this being college sports, there's all kinds of debates around how it's played, how it's managed. Much of the debate is over money, which is the American way. So we have this group of Pac-12 football players. It's a little hard, frankly, to figure out just how many of them feel this way, how organized they are, how united they are. But they did write an article in the Players Tribune and put out a press release issuing demands to the Pac-12, not just about safety protocols, but delving into things like name, image, and likeness and the financial revenue sharing and all that. And then on top of that, there's the little kerfuffle at Washington State. Supposedly they're cutting players part of the group. So take it where you want. What's going on in the Pac-12?
Yeah, so we did a story that I thought was a team effort for our group at The Athletic, and it wasn't just about how this group came into be, but it's also a lot about how viable really is it, meaning as people within the Pac-12 and leadership try to sort it out, it's like, okay, just how big is this movement? And it's one thing for people to retweet their teammates and some of the other college football players and say, you know, we support them. The question I think is, they support them. Does that mean that some of these other players who are connected to this, does that mean they're also willing to opt out and not play as well? And I think that's a real question, because as we reported in The Athletic, there's also some layers to this where there were no team votes about this, so nobody knew how big this was. Also, one of the people who we've been told is really driving this is Ramogi Humah. And if that name's a little familiar to some folks, he was a former UCLA linebacker years ago, who was really connected to the Kane Coulter unionization story at Northwestern 5, 6, 7 years ago. And he was also connected to the UCLA story about 2 months ago, where I think some people inside UCLA felt it was a little bit of a bait and switch, where they signed something and then all of a sudden a letter went to the LA Times, which, as Dorian Thompson Robinson, their star quarterback, told me, it was like, that was never the intention. And so I think they wonder, is this right now, is this a media story looking for a constituency? That was something that was brought up to me. I think no doubt it has gotten some momentum as it went on social media. It certainly has gotten people's attention. The question is, how does Larry Scott and the Pac-12 handle it? And just how much bigger does this thing get? Because right now we don't know any of that. But when people look at the particulars of it, meaning the eye-popping stuff is, wait, they want a 50-50 revenue share or whatever. And one of the people I talked to on Sunday for our story said, who's going to do the negotiating on this? When you're talking about, are they going to have, like, what's their accounting team look like? What's their finance team look like? I mean, some of the players have you're referencing endowments. That's not how some of this stuff works. And I think some of the things that needed to be sorted out are still very much in their infancy stage. And I don't doubt that the Pac-12 is taking this seriously, as they should. But I think the Pac-12 also is trying to say, hey, maybe we'll meet you halfway on some of these things, but this dialogue needs to, I think they would much rather it happen. And who's representing him? Is it all Ramogi Humah? Who else is on the advocacy side of this? Because it is right now, it is pretty all over the place.
And, you know, you mentioned Ramogi Humah. I mean, they lost the unionization fight. Now, whether you're happy with that or not is beside the point. They cannot form a union. They cannot have a formal negotiation. They don't have one voice to be the head of their union. So that puts them, behind the eight ball. But also just in terms, Bruce, of the public debate, and the public is always sympathetic towards these athletes, as well we should be. But do you think that they're sort of risking overreaching their position by making this about those financials and name, image, and likeness, as opposed to just the COVID and health issues. If they keep things focused on COVID and health, then they can put themselves in a position where they are more protected against this virus.
Probably, but I'll be honest, I'm not probably the ideal person to answer that. I mean, I'm somebody looking at it maybe a little more pragmatically. And also, honestly, I think I'm somebody who probably thinks like, well, you're going to get a lot of blowback from this, in terms of there's going to be some people who are going to immediately jump to that point and dismiss everything else. Because I probably spend, being totally self-aware, I probably spend more time than I should thinking about how things play on social media and on Twitter. So where you usually see the best and the worst of things, right? And so you either see so many people outraged. I had SI.com did a story that I think with Ramogi Humo, where they quoted some of the players involved. And at the time, the biggest name player attached to it is Javon Holland. He's a safety at Oregon, really, really good player. He made some strong comments that I thought were not insignificant towards, like, they were just, I think in itself, I think they were noteworthy about we don't know long-term risks of this. And there was, I think it was a good voice to have. And there was probably, just in the reaction to the quote I posted, I think it was like 5,000 likes and a ton of comments of people either outraged or inspired. And I think sometimes the reality falls somewhere, usually in the middle. And that's the part where I think what you're saying is probably true. It's just, I think the people who are driving this looked at this and go, let's put this in there, let's put that in there. And I think they're trying to satisfy a lot of people, in their own corner. And maybe that's probably not the most realistic way to get stuff done.
So if the season happens, as you mentioned, Bruce, Notre Dame's going to play an ACC conference schedule. How significant is that?
It's huge in the regard of, like, when, for years, Notre Dame, the argument was, hey, join a conference. No, we love that we have something unique about us that nobody else in college football can say they have. And so they clung to that for a long time. And look, Seth, you and I are roughly this, about the same age. We both remember growing up when Notre Dame it's still a big deal, but Notre Dame was a way bigger deal in national college football, when not every game was on TV. Now I can watch on the, if I live in Georgia or if I live in Texas, I can watch every Boise State game they play, or I can watch every Boston College game if I'm on the West Coast. But back then you didn't see many games, and Notre Dame had such a level of prominence. And I think to some degree that has been diminished. It's not to say the program's not nationally relevant. It is, but I think for them to make that move, for Notre Dame to make the concession, hey, you know what, we're going to share in our revenue from home games, which were part of that NBC package. I think Jack Swarbrick and Notre Dame read the tea leaves, and I think they made a wise business decision. Now, what happens a year from now, or when, quote unquote, we get a little more back to normal, they may see that it's in their best interest to be partnered with Clemson and Miami and Florida State and Boston College, and as opposed to where they were before. Because I also think some of the challenges they had playing teams in all sorts of different time zones at different times, I think that has made it more challenging for them to stay at a certain level. And so maybe that'll be one of the realities that come from it. But I think this was a big story that was kind of maybe overshadowed to some degree with people seeing a scheduling grid for all of college football that the ACC jumped out in front of first.
Last question, Bruce, I'm a bottom line kind of guy. So over the last, let's say, 2 weeks, bottom line, everything going on, including what we all know is happening with the virus around the country. Over the last 2 weeks, did we move closer to having a college football season, further away, or are we in about the same place we were 2 weeks ago?
I think we moved a little closer because especially the SEC decided, hey, we're going to move back to late September. The Pac-12 announced that they were going to be in late September. I just think that, look, this thing could get derailed, but at least there's some stuff on paper right now. And for that, as you and I both are trying to be optimistic, and obviously we want college football. I mean, especially, you know, in my case, it's so much a part of my livelihood and it's a passion. I think there's a reason for optimism. I don't think it's, you know, I'm not going to blindly think that, oh yeah, this is definitely happening. But I feel like at least in the last week or so, that part's encouraging. But I know that it could easily go back. You know, I feel like it's a lot. It's basically like the people who run college football are trying to thread a needle right now because there's just so many factors that go into college football. This isn't the NBA in a bubble. This isn't the NHL in a bubble. This isn't golf. I think where you, social distancing, it's just a lot harder to do for college football when you have no centralized leadership, when you have such big roster sizes, when you don't have as much money to test. There's just, and you're on campuses, even if all the Power Five guys that leadership say, hey, don't take classes in person, take all your classes online and stay away from campus. And I don't doubt that some schools are going to tell their players that. They may not announce that they're telling their players that. I think even then it's still, you're asking 18 to 22 year olds to, I don't say live like a monastic lifestyle, but they can't even, never mind going to bars or hanging out at parties. But you got to be careful about just going over to somebody's house if they're just going to watch TV or play Madden. You know, that's the parts where it's like, we're talking about an extended period of time. You know, it's like meeting people, meeting women, all these other things. It's just, it's potentially problematic when the numbers and cases are sizable around you.
Well, it's just hilarious to me when you see some yahoos on Twitter saying, oh, you know, all these sports writers, you know, trying to talk down the sports so they don't happen. I mean, first of all, this is our livelihood, and we want to see these sports be played. So any cause for optimism, we're going to seize on it. And I agree. It's been a pretty good 2 weeks. We'll see what the next 2 weeks bring, but at least we're still in the ball game. That's all we can hope for. Bruce, thanks so much for being on the pod. Really appreciate all your work on The Athletic and your podcasting with Stuart Mandel, The Audible. You know I'm a fan. So keep up the great work. Stay safe and best of luck down the road.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Seth. Thanks for having me.
My thanks to Bruce Feldman for joining the show. You can hear more from him on his podcast, The Audible, which he co-hosts with Stuart Mandel. I'm Seth Davis, and this is The Comeback, presented by The Athletic. Be sure to follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you access your podcasts, as we track the major issues surrounding the return of sports. Thanks for listening, everybody.